Good evening, everybody, and welcome to our much more regular at this point Wednesday stream. We've done two in a row.
Hello.
Hello. Do we get a special award? Can we get a hat? Can we get a pat on the head and some?
I'm even here for once.
Yes, Evelyn's actually here as well.
I'm waving profusely. Hello.
You can't see her, but she's waving. She is waving very, very, very profusely. Yes, hello to all the small people in the champ. How do you all fit in there? We don't know. It's been a while since we've done, I suppose, a stream with this many different headings and topics and bits and pieces. This is going to be, in our usual tradition, rather dense. But we're going to try and pass a lot of information that is quite textural. First of all, though, the weather, it's been raining.
Yeah, shite.
Shite.
It's winter.
It's basically, again, like I said last week, smash cut into winter.
I'm sorry.
Summer, bam, hit the winter.
I'm sorry, fellow summer cells.
Oh,
it's
no.
Over.
It's over. It's winter chud time now.
I've had to don my layers and become a cool chud.
Cool chud. Summer cells owned. It is now time for the winter chud. God. I'm trying to think of other stuff that's been going on, really. I don't know. I guess AA brought out another book.
We went and saw the exhibit.
Oh, we did go and see the exhibit. Sorry, you mean the exhibition?
Yes.
The one in London.
We did not go and see exhibit.
No, we didn't. We went to see the Power and Intimacy exhibit in London. Somebody even bought something.
Yes.
Although I've been told to shut up about that.
Yeah,
so I will
as
be,
you should.
I'll be
but
quiet.
We went and we met some folk we've not seen in a while and met some new friends. Some of you, I presume, you might even be in the chat or watching
yes.
this later on as the VOD. So it's been great to come and meet some folk and hopefully, other things willing, next year and whatever else, we can do a bit more of meeting people and maybe even stuff.
Oh, we'll see, yes. I think you're cutting out a bit, though.
Right.
Yeah, well, you need to address the microphone correctly.
All right, then. Yes, I don't think really much else to add. I suppose before we start the stream, we should do an obligatory bit of shilling. If you aren't already aware for some reason, and I question why you aren't, we have a book. So
yes.
If you would like to get basically all the greatest hits of the stuff on the Substack and some other speeches and essays that have only previously been available either live when you were there or in separate collections, you can get that all for the very reasonable price of £19 plus shipping.
Anyway, we do actually have another advert. We have an actual advert which we haven't used properly yet, but I have shared. I need to use that properly.
Should we play it at the end or something? Or?
No. Well, I might do. I might switch on the end. To be fair, I need to integrate that properly, so I don't want to rush into that. But no, we also have another ad here, and in an ad hoc ad that I didn't realize we'd be getting. So,
if you want to know more about what I'm getting it here, buy books. Other than that, don't ask me what needs to be.
The,
yes.
The strong influence of by book.
A lot of people ask you, well, is that, of course that's real. Did none of you remember that Dan Keeler was actually the special secret guest at No Mas Manchester back in 20? I guess people don't remember all that. We have old lore, but no, we've been acquaintances and friends and known of and met with Dank a few times over the years. So it's been a long, God, I feel so old now.
I know, I've known Dank since like 2018, 2019 in some respect.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're all old trends
old,
and old fags and
oh yes.
But
oh.
Yes, if you already own the book and you still want to support us, you can give us a donation through the Ko-fi,
yes.
Which is somewhere on the stream and in the chat. You can donate via YouTube or you
we
can subscribe to the Substack.
Yes.
Or you can be that one person in the chat that gives us super stickers because he's the only person that uses the feature.
Thank you, Lamented Guide, for being the only you are like the person who keeps the heavens erect.
But the typical
but for YouTube super
the typical
stickers.
Leaf.
Typical leaf.
Right.
Well,
so
who are the elites?
Yes.
To tell this story, we must start...
with who are not the elites.
No, we must start where many things do not start. But the starting point is actually in Burnley. As all good stories start in Burnley. Many of you will probably not even know what or where Burnley is. Burnley is a town in Lancashire that was one of the patient zeros in the 1990s outside of Bradford for having, let's say, demographic alterations.
Very deliberate, engineered at national level, immigration to break the back of hard-nosed white nativism.
Yes, and it is these areas that became the first areas that voted in the BNP. In fact, you know what? I've not got it out there yet, so I'll read a little bit here because I've been trying to write a piece about this, but to not much success. So, Muslims parade down the main street, waving banners in Arabic for the Prophet Muhammad's birthday. The call to prayer rings out from the mosque minarets on cue for the daily prayers. There have been race riots, which some claim are one-sided ethnic violence, and pubs have been firebombed by Muslim gangs with the customers still inside. There is a spike in crime, particularly rape. A council has been elected by a party currently fighting in the courts to retain a white-only membership. This isn't some hypothetical GB News fever dream of the future. This was Burnley from 2001 to 2009. One of the most rapidly Islamified areas in Britain. To quote the headline from June 2009, BNP wins first county council seat in Burnley. The far-right party took the Padlam and Burnley West ward in Lancashire in local elections, ending 20 years of Labour rule.
And what happened only about a year after this?
Well, we've just got a kind of a thing here.
You want to scroll through.
Well, the MP's name was Sharon Wilkinson.
Yes.
Well, not the MP, sorry. The councillor's name was Sharon Wilkinson. And not even yet, at the time, this is March 2010, so this is nearly a year after she was elected as the county councillor. BNP whites-only membership rules outlaw. The judges agreed with Human Rights Watchdog that British National Party's rewritten criteria for joining is still racist. So
was this the Supreme Court at the time, by any chance?
I'm not even sure. It might be the High Court.
A Central London County Court, right.
All right, yes. At the time of her election, Sharon Wilkinson was the representative of an explicitly white-only party in an area that had major Muslim boroughs. In the adjoining town Nelson, the white population was already a minority. To quote the 2011 census, in total, the Asian population of the three Nelson areas came to 57.5% of total population, the white population making up 37.8% of total population. This was 2011. So these are the areas on the bubble.
Yeah.
These are the areas that people talk about, oh, Britain's waking up. This is why we poured so much scorn on people, because all these things have happened before.
Yeah,
there were race riots, and a councillor for a party that was explicitly white only was elected. Not only did nothing happen, these people were performatively punished for doing so.
Well, people always say to us, oh, it'll happen from the bottom up. The people will rise up, and they will be righteous. This is what happens when they do it. These people were under insane local demographic pressure. As you said, in areas like Nelson, they were already a minority. The county councils, town councils, whatever else, were already dominated by an Islamist sort of fiefdom. And a party of otherwise normal people rose up, tried to do something about it, and squashed from the big city.
Yes, they were destroyed from above. This is to hammer home the point of bottom-up revolts being symbolic. Often areas that do stand up are punished from above by the elite. But who are the elite? How do they function? And a lot of people, we talk about the elite quite a lot, but we haven't done a full kind of textual roundup of what we mean by this. Because a lot of what you think of as the elite has different connotations. And what we mean isn't a merit signifier, it is a class signifier, yes, as best expressed in the work of Samuel Francis. We don't do many literary quotes anymore because we like to talk about these things in very basic terms. We also like to use reality as our evidence.
Anyone that hasn't should go and read Burnham's The Managerial Revolution.
Yes.
As much of him as you can get. And if you really feel that you're up to the task, Sam Francis' Leviathan and Its Enemies and all 800 pages of its glory is there waiting for you if you wish to take it on.
I would read Burnham's three managerialism books, those being The Managerial Revolution, The Machiavellians, and Suicide of the West.
Some of his other work from the same time, like World on... not World on Fire.
Yeah, it's the one I've quoted before. The Struggle for the World.
World on Fire is Francis Parker Young.
Yes.
But
it is a very large book.
What I think we're trying to demonstrate here is that these were a group of people, a shared set of ideas,
yes,
a very specific shared goal.
Yes.
They organized in their local community to probably the most secretive extent they could.
Yes.
They implicitly and then explicitly under legal challenge attempted to gatekeep their organization as thoroughly as they could. And yet, they came to no power. Nick Griffin, as the head figure of this, was basically mocked unendingly still in British media. Oh, remember when he was on Question Time, they made him look like a mug. Ooh. Meanwhile, at the same time, a certain subset of activists working with the Special Demonstration Squad leaked the members list onto basically WikiLeaks at the time, was it not?
Yes, it was.
And as a consequence of such, hundreds of people from that local area still to this day probably live with the consequences of that.
But to understand what we're talking about, the prerequisite is you must understand that normal people don't matter,
yes,
but also that normal people aren't to blame. They are political non-entities. They are political non-combatants, most of them. The normal people have no power to move this country, and you must surrender to that in your own mind before we can move on.
Yes.
If you can't surrender to that in your own mind, if you can't understand that, if you can't internalize it completely, if that doesn't rule your worldview, then you are not going to make it, and you should switch this off now, because everything we're about to say will not make sense to you, because you have to understand this in a hard, an extremely hard, solid, top-down manner. Nothing goes up. Everything comes down. That is how power works.
The organized minority with means and institutions at hand defeats the disorganized majority that have none of these things.
Yes.
And even when the majority in small pockets does organize itself and it does try to act like an elite class, it begins to find out rather quickly that it's not.
You must take the existence of the elite as an immutable force is a given. What we are going to describe is their current shape. We're not complaining that these people are elites or that elites exist. These people will always exist. There will always be people in power. There will always be people who administrate. There will always be people who have to wield power for people who wield power. These things are immutable to human organization. What we're talking about here really is who are the current elite. Mm. Who are the elite that we serve under? What is the textual nature of them? How do they work? And a large part of the struggle is that most people have been told that the elites don't exist anymore. We are, yes, supposed to be in a post-elite world, really. But yet we can't escape them. We also can't escape elites talking about themselves and each other as elites as well. So let's just get into this, though. We have quite a lot to cover. First of all, you must understand that the elite is the organized minority as a class.
Yes, think of it as a conglomeration of people with an interest in the maintenance of a political regime.
Yes.
This does not mean party alliance.
No.
This does not even sometimes mean ethnic or religious alliance.
Although those are important within certain sections,
yes,
of
course. But what we are really fundamentally trying to grasp at here is that there is a collection of people, and it is those people who, on a day-to-day basis, are maintaining the regime that we live under.
Yes.
These are our oligarchs. Let's literally use whatever term we want really here for them. There is no word, really. We don't have a word for these people, because the time we do have a word for these people will be the time we can actually eradicate them in some sense and clear them out.
The best term that I try and use for these people is petty kings.
Hmm.
They are peasants pretending to be lords, and they are exactly what you get when a peasant pretends to be a lord. It makes people very upset when you tell them this, but, like, the proles are filthy. They actually are. The mass is disgusting and stupid and immoral, and it has very little of value to offer you.
But you can see the class loyalty quite,
yes,
simply. I mean, an individual we've talked about to no end, Matt Goodwin, he does a little bit of this, the people versus the elites.
Yes.
But then when he gets down to talking specifically about the elites, he talks about woke and liberal elites. Because what he's really trying to do is a rearguard action to preserve the elite class, which he is a part of.
Yes.
Whilst excising its more slightly distasteful bits to make it appear nicer to you, the pleb.
Well, as you said here, a class is identified by it's got a hierarchy within it, discipline across it, and crucially, customs that can only be understood from within it. The elite class, especially near the top, is still largely hereditary and has undergone its own revolution of mass and scale. They are petty kings on top of an extremely bloated court.
Yes.
And thinking of these people as the wider courtiers, this is the managerial court. It is huge. The managerial court is massive, and those within it have very little individual power. But this does function like a court. You must also understand that these people, as you've talked about, they operate on a much greater time and scale than we do.
And something that's, I must admit, I mean, we've got this example up here, but it's something we've been watching the last week or so.
Yeah.
Bits of the original 1980s US minister.
Yeah.
And straight away, what's his name? Humphrey, this permanent undersecretary for the civil service, who really is a character we might have to come back to a couple of times in this stream because he is representative of a lot of what we're trying to discuss.
He is, yes.
But he looks at this MP and thinks, well, you're going to be a right bee in my bonnet, but you'll be gone in 4 or 5 years. So you are not looking at the world in the way I do.
No.
So you're under me like some kind of child. So when you aren't living day to day, or you aren't living even election period to election, you are just fundamentally in power and thinking about how to maintain the power you have as an individual,
yes,
and you have as part of a class for, let's say, the next century, you're allowed to think about things in a very different way. And that is why someone like Tony Blair and some of his plans become just inevitable. We actually
Tony Blair
can't do anything
does not
about them.
Try and persuade politicians. He tries to persuade permanent bureaucracy. Because Tony Blair understands that politicians are not in power, and those who administer the permanent bureaucracies in a real sense are.
Mm.
And that is what Yes Minister is saying in a gentle way, but it's worth saying in a very forceful way, which is time and scale. Tony Blair didn't win the debate on ID cards. He simply had a larger time horizon and pushed on a bigger scale.
He just stepped over the platform of debate.
Yes.
and operated, as you say, at such a scale over such a length of time that all policy in Britain began to just point to this thing as the panacea.
Yes.
And the sort of silver bullet that's going to fix all these policy problems we have.
Tony Blair has been trying to make this point in almost exactly the same way since I was 6 years old. That is how persistent this project is, and how imagine the discipline to sit there for God, it's 28 years since 1997. We'll call that the start, really, of Blair proper. Mm-hmm. But for 28 years, he has sat there in and out of political power, in quotes, although he was never out of political power, banging this same drum, because he understands that as an elite, his main advantage is that he has the time and space to implement his agenda, no matter how unpopular it is, or no matter how few people pull with him in the beginning.
And think about this in terms of immigration, something that really starts before Blair and has been continued long past, really, I think, even what he personally would want the project to become.
Oh, far beyond.
And you begin to realise why, democratically, why election period to election period, you can't fight these things. Because you could set up a party dedicated to fighting this, like many people have, and it either gets shut down because it doesn't abide by the Equality Act, or it spends so much time chasing its own tail across 4 or 5 election periods that it becomes a party about something completely different. Because the people running it do not have that liberty. He's so ardent and so autistically obsessed with one singular issue for 25 years. I mean, we could maybe say one slight success along this vein was Brexit. But look at the amount of momentum and effort it took to make that happen, only for it to be turned on its head anyway.
Yes, it was completely inverted.
But there is another characteristic we must recognise about the elite class, and especially today. That there is overproduction of elites. There are two... Oh, my God, it's that lot from the other day. Many of them. There are too many sons, daughters, granddaughters, grandnieces, checking cousins twice removed.
Yeah, mistresses, daughters.
Of people who are MPs or high-ranking civil servants or high-ranking NGO, generals. Yeah, yeah,
people who head NGOs.
This is the bloated court. Yes. With tens of thousands of people who have a position they might think is powerful.
Yes.
But in the grand scheme of things, really isn't. And this is actually a large part of what the elite are doing on a day-to-day basis. They're managing their own runts of the litter,
yes,
so as to keep them well-behaved, keep them prim and proper and looked after with some sort of welfare, but also at the same time use them as a filtering mechanism.
Yes. When talking about the elite, there are a lot of instances of as above, so below. The elite as a class are not a merit category. A lot of people make this mistake. Mm. No, we're not talking about merit, Patrick. They obey the same rules as any large organization or group. They obey the 80-20 rule. But elite overproduction turns this more into a 90-10 rule. As a class, they have to support their own peripheral members over and above the mass and the non-governing elite. We'll get into some of the structure of this in a little bit, because I have some more textual stuff here, but here's... there's even stuff about it here. This persuasion. Why do so many elites feel like losers? It's destabilizing to have a nation of young strivers with no coherent vision or path for success. This is by Freddie. The thing is, this article itself isn't that great, but it does...
It's fundamentally talking about what we're yes, looking at here, which is that you've kind of got to keep a lot of these people in the illusion that they're important when they really aren't.
No. And a lot of these, the problem is it's become so diluted that your bottom rung elites, they're differentiated in important ways, but they can no longer provide them with the amenities you would expect for being some form of actual elite.
Yes.
And a lot of these people, as we'll get to, don't understand they are elites. They don't understand the fundamental differences that they have to the man in the street, which are immutable and they're born with in most cases. These people are still born into this, most of them. And yet they are the fish who cannot see the water, because being an elite has become so diluted and the interactions are so many, there's so many of them, that they start to believe that they're normal.
And what it allows as well is that because these people are, I mean, dare I say, born into essentially some form of privilege.
Yes.
And that genuine, hereditary, pseudo-aristocratic sense, they are allowed to do things and take upon roles at a younger age that individuals like ourselves and like many of the people listening to this cannot.
Well,
you cannot. It's not going to happen. You could sell your soul or a Tory, or a Labour, or a Reform MP, become their assistant and work with them as their understudy or whatever for 2 years. You can't afford to do that. You're going to travel in and out from London, and you're going to spend all your wages on train tickets in 1 year.
Well, that's the point. That's why these and why this is so funny. Here's Lee Anderson, now a Reform MP. Boop-a-doop-a-doo, I've gone light blue, a.k.a. the light blue Tories. He's also, I just find him quite distasteful, as I do all the Reform people.
But skin-suiting many other things.
No good MPs. Katie works for me. She is single and earns less than 30k. Rents a room for 77, blah, 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 blah. Student debt. Here she is. Okay, this is Lee Anderson making a point about one of his little workers. That, oh, she's normal. She's you know, she lives in her way and is normal.
She spends more than a third of her income on her rent, by the way.
Yes.
Straight away.
Revealed. Staff member on less than 30k, used by Tory MP Lee Anderson's argument against nurses needing... This whole thing turned into like a thing about food banks. Mm. But actually what it is about the fact that every position within politics is sewn up because of elite overproduction. Attended a £33,000 a year private school and is the daughter of not decorated army veterans, putting it a bit. He's a
brigadier?
Brigadier Coulthorpe, CBE.
Mm.
He also, like, from what I've read about him, he comes across like a right brown-nosing establishment wanker.
Well, he's worked in Northern Ireland, Bosnia and Afghanistan. I would presume some of the things he's done in these fronts will not be repeated ever, and that is why he's in the position he's in.
Yes.
Why he can send his daughter to work for Lee Anderson as an assistant MP or whatever, and she'll probably get pocket money from daddy.
My daddy killed brown people for paedophiles.
But you can see here that this woman is probably completely and utterly useless. More money has been spent on her education than will be spent on most of us in our lives. And here she is, on the bottom rung of the ladder, working her way up. But that's it.
Yeah.
The bottom rung of the ladder might as well be 300 bloody feet up for us.
Yes.
Because you need that first step up. But there's too many of these people.
But if you were to you know, end up on a, let's say, if Miss Coulthard was to end up at, say, the ARC event, and you referred to her as an elite, she'd probably be offended. Mm. I'm not an elite. I just used to be a ministerial aide.
I bet Winston, whatever six names he's got, Marshall, that's son of Paul Marshall, I reckon he probably thinks of himself as a sort of pop star and renegade. But really, he's the son of a multi-billionaire conservative party from the elite.
If you ever find your way to this, you are a talentless Nepo baby and everyone laughs at you.
All the people in the podcast sphere, all the people around Spiked and Spectator, New Culture Forum, these are all massive catch nets.
It's these people. It's the minor elites. All of them belong to this class. Very recognisably belong to this class. I use Miss Coulthard here because she's such a ground level example.
Does Winston Marshall's show get so popular on YouTube? It's not. No one watches it. It's just that people are willing to pay a fortune to get him ad placements, and Daddy probably fills in the budget every year or two when there's 15 or 20 grand missing.
Well, this brings us on to what most of these people are doing, which is the idol elite. Policy Exchange former Policy Exchange alum Calvin Robinson there, farting around at Disneyland, a man who's never been allowed to fail.
But I think it's worth mentioning, as a consequence of these people being so overproduced,
yes,
they have to be given things to do.
Yes.
But these things that they're given aren't worthwhile.
They're not real. These people are idle. They're busy idle, but they are idle. They swan off to America on a whim. Elite overproduction has led to a larger section of the elite than ever before being idle, but managerialism presents these types with busy work in return for a guaranteed income and loyalty. The busy work mostly involves demonstrating and reaffirming the positions of the elites above them using various narratives. Within the minor elite, fake work is more prevalent than in the mass. The non-governing elite, those who are not part of the elite but are placed in low-level functional positions largely to technical knowledge, increasingly too are made in the model of the largely idle elite, with many low-level elites of less than stellar intelligence not understanding that, one, they are elites, and two, their work is fake. This is a problem, as some of those people are supposed to be doing some actual work.
Yes. Policy Exchange, the Henry Jackson Society, the New Culture Forum, we could go on and on, and Centre for Social Justice, all these things. A great example of the idle elite's welfare schemes.
Yes.
People paid to look busy and make Tory noises or make Labour noises. And people sit there and go, you might want to put on.
I will do in a sec. I'm just going to.
People sit there and they ask the question, why do we have these giant eco schemes? Why do we have all these social justice programmes? It's not because anyone cares. It's to give these people something to do.
Yes.
Now, obviously, there's the NGO network, and we've studied the specifically more insipid and subversive elements of this. What we've really found in researching a lot of this stuff is that a lot of it's just there to fill time.
It's there to take up space. It's there to give people a job. Here we go. Non-governmental organisation expenditure on UK biodiversity. Most of this is basically by the government, though. So, spending on biodiversity in the UK by non-governmental organisations with a focus on biodiversity. £353 million in 2022/2023. An increase of 6% over 2010 to 2011. So, even in just this small sector alone, we've had a huge jump in elite welfare. And if you look at all these green NGOs, all these biodiversity initiatives,
all your anti-immigration think tanks,
all your
anti-net zero think tanks,
all your pro-net zero think tanks, all your pro-immigration,
your pro-abortion groups, your anti-abortion groups.
They've all got a member of the minor elite in there somewhere. It's all some, like, good example, Unheard. Who is there? We talked about Frank Ferretti, leader of the Revolutionary Communist Party, one of the founding members of Spiked. His son is one of the editors, the managing editors of Unheard. Because you can't have a visible organization that interacts with politics without one of these Nepo babies, without one of these disgusting minor elite loyalists there to keep people in line. The non-governing elite who are... the other thing here we've got as well is just this.
Number of NGOs since...
Well, this is number of NGOs affiliated with the UN. This is specifically graph the number of NGOs in consultative state with the UN Economic and Social Council for each year from 1945.
Yeah, so all these people who would have otherwise died on battlefields or in horse races or in car races or would have buggered off to some mountaineering expedition and all died. They're all now working for fucking NGOs and
but
the blob.
Look at this. Look at the inflection point in 1995. When in 1995, they basically decide, look, NGOs the future.
But the thing is, I will do one thing here, and it will relate is to the next point, which I'd like to sort of get into as well, is I wouldn't actually blame Tony Blair for this.
No.
What he's done at this point is realised, wait, why not just throw more wood in the fire and hide my secret little bits of government back? But anyway,
yes.
If we have talked about the idle elite, one thing we're also going to have to discuss is the sovereign elite.
Well, first of all, I'm going to go through some of the structural stuff here. Oh, sorry. Yes.
Yes, I'm going off your order here.
No. I'm going to say I've got the. Before we go any further, I did also draw. There's another way to explain this, which is slightly graphically. I've knocked up a few of these things, but we're kind of rattling through this. I was hoping to interject this somewhere. But this roughly, it's a bit rough, but this roughly is what happens in that you have the mass of people who are non-productive. They basically don't do fucking anything. Then you have the productive class, and where the productive class, God damn it, where the productive class, why won't it just let me, and that, where the productive class and the elite meet is what I refer to as the interface. What we have here, and that is the bit, this, by the way, is the only place you can ever have an effect. If you're part of a non-elite, you have to make your way into this interface layer somehow.
Or completely build your own hierarchy outside of this.
No, but the thing is, yes, you can, but when you do, you will usually be approached by people from this layer.
Mm.
People approach with curiosity. This here, this thin layer, is the only place I think that anything can be done. This is where you persuade elites. Everyone always talks about the elite, and this is where we have contact with elites. Apart from this, apart from where they have to promote people into functional roles due to their technical knowledge, they are firewalled off from us almost completely. They are a closed class. They interact with elites. They talk to other elites. They don't even realize they're elites because there's so many of them. The Whitehall bubble, we can call it what we want, but there's all these different little places. And the difference is, if you're part of the productive class, you are promoted upwards. You are commissioned into this interface zone where you are doing management work for the elite. If you're already an elite, it's usually minor elites that get put in this position. It feels like a step down. You are seconded. You are placed within these organizations where you basically mix with proles, and only a certain type of lower ranking elite is put in that position, and you usually will only interact with lower ranking elites. But this is where the mixing takes place. This is the only place, really, the mixing takes place. And an important point is that the productive class who are promoted can be kicked out immediately if need be. But the elite class who are put in these positions, if they fail, are usually reassigned.
Yes.
That's the point, in that they're made men. The people who are promoted are like enlisted men. It's like being an officer that was, went through Sandhurst and became an officer from an officer background, and an officer who's promoted from the ranks. There is a very different treatment between those two. And that is really what goes on with the elite class.
And it's worth describing, I think, what this effect creates.
Yes.
You have a sovereign elite.
Yes.
A recognisable group of people who are what you can only describe as in power.
These are the people who are actually decisionary. Yes. They are in power in a real
sense. The diffuse nature of power within modern managerial states is sold to us as a method of preventing tyranny. But the nature of sovereignty must means that someone must be decisionary and in charge anyway. So what we end up as a consequence of this is we create an ultra-insulated class of individuals who wield power with a bloated elite beneath them, each defending their own little small slice and stake as they go.
Yes.
It is only a handful of people, even within the elite itself, who are involved in decision-making. The managerial apparatus is designed to make those who wield this homeopathic power non-decisionary over any aspect of it. By outwardly combating the tyranny of the arbitrary individual, they rigidly enforce the consensus of an arbitrary class they claim does not exist.
Again, to consult the chart, the way I've tried to imagine this is, yes, power operates top-down, but power also operates top-down within the elite. Yes. Again, as above, so below.
Hierarchy within and without.
Yes. So what you get is, you get a very small amount of the sovereign elite, who are probably only about 1% of the actual elite. They are the 1% of the 1%. They are the people who are actually in power. Their power isn't diluted, and everyone else is really beneath them is. And they control the membership of the elite. And the elite control the membership of the managing / non-governing elite, the people who pull the levers, the people who are put in genuine positions of responsibility. These people keep the water clean. They keep the power going. They oversee the court cases. They are the important wheels. They are the wheels that cannot fall off.
Do you want to get the link up there before we go on to the next bit?
Oh, this one. Well, this is just another example. You know, Tony Blair's not only got his digital ID, he is, everyone thought it was crazy, he is going to be the overseer, a modern-day high commissioner to Gaza.
Again, another example.
Despite what anybody will say or what anyone wants.
Again, another example of him being representative of an agenda
yes.
that we can't vote out.
No. You can't vote against digital ID in the same way you can't vote against Tony Blair being the High Commissioner of Gaza. It simply happens. It simply happens because of this. And again, to zoom in even further into this. I've actually missed one here. What we talked about earlier, though, is that within the elite, with elite overproduction, there is a huge amount of the elite who are just idle. You must remember, when you're talking to people who are quote-unquote elites, most of them don't do anything. All they do surrogate work that is even more humiliatingly fake than the email jobs that normal pros have. When you interact with this structure, you must remember that 80% of the people in it not only don't matter, are actively kept away from mattering because it's dangerous to the rest
and
of them.
This, if you bring that back up for a second,
yes.
This sliver, this whole segment here that is... Yes. What we might describe as non-idle.
Yes.
That's really the only component that actually matters in the final analysis. Because we look at how Robert Filmer first viewed even consensus making in a court.
Yes.
He really thought, well, there's a minority of two or three who are so hardcore in believing in a position that the rest of them just sort of go with it anyway.
Yes.
And that is why we have this, well, Cthulhu swims to the left and blah, blah, blah. Because you have 80% of the quote-unquote governing elite spread across this strata that doesn't actually do anything other than just jobs worth do what they're told on a day-to-day basis. So as long as that other 20% is driving them along, how are you as someone outside of that frame or even within it going to either convince this other 20% to change their mind or convince the other 80% to be so obstinate as to basically sacrifice their own job and their position in the class, which is the one thing they won't do.
Oh, I've got some quick donations here. Thank you for the super sticklemented guy for the $5. Thank you for being the only man who uses those. The two cities, Schmidt gave the key. Who holds the sovereign exception? The synagogue, those who are enemies of all mankind, as St. Paul tells us in the Holy Scripture. Fair enough. Facilitating a real-time monetary contribution to support content delivery during the live online outreach, roughly... consumer it with the cost of a single pint.
Thank you, Piotr.
Thank you, Piotr, for the 200 Czech krona. I'm not quite sure how much that is in real money, but the conversion seems to be it's actually more than a pint, so thank you.
Yes.
It's because you know what? Pints are actually relatively cheap around here still.
But it's worth considering as well a little bit more on who the managing elite and the non-governing elite are and what purpose they serve.
Yes.
Managing elites are elites in important positions of non-decisionary and mostly unglamorous management.
Yes.
They are the floor managers and are a mix of elites and non-governing temporary elites For a middle-class person, this feels like a huge promotion. For an elite, someone of the top strata, it can feel beneath them. Getting to that strata that does not work is the main goal of most minor elites.
Yeah, getting to a strata where they don't have to do any work. They really want, a lot of elites want to be promoted out of the bits where they actually
promoted into idleness.
Yes, basically.
So, Nigel Farage is a member of the elite class. Alison Rose, the woman who was in charge of NatWest at the time when there was a giant banking row,
here's a case study. Alison Rose versus Nigel Farage and the debanking scandal is what happens when a promoted functionary goes up against a made man of the elite.
The elite class did something interesting in the debanking scandal in that they put their foot down as a class that the cancelling financially of private individuals does not apply to them. What are they, politically exposed persons?
Yes, yes.
The non-ruling elite often fall foul of the exception when they have come up against a made man who is actually an elite.
This was a huge hat tip that Nigel Farage is a made-up insider, because it wasn't that Nigel Farage defeated the bankers, it's that the elite class rallied round one of their own inside men who is becoming increasingly important to them.
Many minor elites will not even know they are born into a world of elite status. Their social circle is disproportionately made up of higher ranking elites, right? Making them feel like a normal person in comparison. They are not. You can be a penniless elite. Your class still gives you privileges and access a millionaire in the mass could never buy. And this is the important point. Nigel Farage isn't just some businessman. He is now a paid up member of the conservative political establishment in Britain. Beyond party loyalty, beyond the day-to-day politics stuff.
And we've seen that he will play ball.
Bang your pots and pans.
Yeah, bang your pots and pans, comrade. You know, I'm in favour of legal immigration, comrade. It's all of these things. He's staying on message. He's being useful and staying on point.
But this is why people sometimes think we simplify the analysis too much and that we disregard the distinctions between individual factions within the elite. But what we tend to find is that when rubber meets the road,
yes,
this abstract elite class loyalty that we are discussing supersedes everything.
It also solidifies amazingly quickly. Seemingly out of nowhere.
Another component of the distinction necessarily between idle and the non-idle elite and how we are looking at it through these stratas is how we have the illusion of rule by consensus. Klaus Schwab, which you've got as an example, I think one of the links up here.
We'll talk about that in a sec, yeah.
Was clearly signals as on the outside via the media. He was denoted as no longer a consensus builder and his organization has been de-emphasized as he is removed from it. As powerful as he seemed in 2021 and during COVID, when they had to make him look like a villain and an individual, not the elite class that were actually in charge of making the decisions employing their functionaries underneath them to do the dirty work.
Yes.
Schwab demonstrates the pitfalls of relying on elite consensus. He fell foul of the consensus in the end, and as such, he became the villain.
We've been over this article a few times, but this is my favourite Guardian article, I think, ever. Mutiny erupts among WF staff over Mr. Davos. Founder and chair Klaus Schwab has run the forum for 52 years, but is now seen as someone past, by seeing some past and present staff as a law unto himself. They basically came out and shanked him. This is a hit job, but it's a very precise hit job that uses extremely precise insider language. They talk about the fact that he hasn't got a successor. They talk about the fact that he is insulating himself
The speculation about Schwab's future has intensified this week after a piece on the online publication Politico said the WEF's strategic partners, the firms that bankrolled the £390 million a year business, were unhappy about the lack of a succession strategy.
There we go.
That's not them being upset that he was still running it. That was them being upset about the fact that they wanted him out.
This line here is amazing because it's them selectively describing what all elite institutions do as a matter of course. And this is what when I realised he was shields down.
Mm.
Because this is what everybody does. They're just pointing out what they do and chastising him for it. It's really funny that he is running things exactly in the same way that Blair does, and yet here they are chastising him for doing so. They say, oh, he surrounded himself with nobodies who are incapable of running the organization he founded in the early 70s. Basically, what he's done is he's insulated himself, which is what all of these people are incentivized to do. We'll go through this process in a little bit.
There's an interesting point here as well, though.
And here's gone further, because WF, again, quietly in April, WF's launched an investigation into Klaus Schwab. And his wife, financial and ethical misconduct, which is very general.
But because...
They basically told him to shut up and go away.
But I think because of the amorphous nature of this consensus and the fact that it's really the wants, goals and agenda of a very small subset of people.
Yes.
They talk about it in a very hard and fast and soft sort of way at different times. So when Tony Blair is clearly pushing something that the public don't want, that a lot of even minor elites aren't interested in implementing because it means they'll no longer be idle.
Yes.
He's a pioneer.
Yes.
He's manifesting
he's
the consensus.
Yes.
But
he's the only man who can move things.
But when Klaus Schwab was doing what he was doing, he was out of the consensus.
Yeah, he's outside.
He was out with.
Yeah. He's a Lawrence himself. He's a renegade.
Mm.
He's not a pioneer. He's a renegade.
Except from the fact that when he was a hero a couple of years before.
Yes.
And to be fair, that'll be one of the most interesting things that ever happens if they attempt to do this to Blair.
I don't think they will.
Dude, do you reckon he just goes all the way and then goes out?
Like, possibly,
he actually just like dies on like the lectern one day.
Yeah.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah, that's probably what's going to happen with Mr. Anthony Linton.
But to finish on Schwab here,
yes.
He can no longer draw on hard power and as such has no recourse against the change in consensus once it is made, both within his organisation and within the elite circles he swim. This consensus is a large part of how the elite, in a globalised form, ensure insurgent actors and programmes are kept from going anywhere.
Well,
even
yes.
If an insurgent elite or fiefdoms arise within their midst.
This, again, an extra layer, I'm adding detail as we go. Between the sovereign elite and the rest of the elite are what I describe as the striving elite. They are the top of the bottom. They are the people who can almost feel themselves as part of the actual in-power elite. They just have to do one more thing. And these are the real filter. These people are why entryism is retarded. And if you believe in entryism, I will laugh in your face because of these people, because of the striving elite.
To go back to the sort of Schwab thing you had up there, what you're suggesting is that instead of him having this cabal of people around him who gave him that consensus that were this insulating layer of idiots that stopped him looking like a renegade,
yes,
it was turned on him.
Yes.
And then it became, oh, he had a cohort of understudies that were incapable.
Well, if we zoom in the striving elite, politicians are a great example of the striving elite,
yes,
because they are definitely not in power.
No.
Frontline politicians are not in power. Some of them can go on to being in power, like Tony Blair did, or a handful, really, of former world leaders have reached that position of where they are actually in power.
I mean, again, yes, Minister.
Well,
it seems like the sort of tone is the fact that anyone that's willing to actually be not just a politician, but a cabinet member,
yeah,
is a complete and utter idiot.
Or they're a cuckoo for the elite class themselves.
Yes.
They're a member of the sovereign elite placed down there, and people basically sit there and
seconded down.
Yeah, and they basically sit there and shake next to them. Mark Carney, great example is Mark Carney. He is trying to sell himself as something of a Blair figure, but he is this amorphous technocrat one minute, politician the next.
But then the other end of that is someone like Angela Rayner.
Yes.
Who keeps someone like Keir Starmer insulated for some of the criticism and flack he would otherwise be accruing for the policy that Labour's putting out.
Yes, if we look at this layer here, the insulating idiot layer between the sovereign elite and the striving elite, that is where the politicians live. That is the politician layer. That really is the person I think of when I think of a a striving elite like that who's just on the bubble. You know, one of them is like I said, the insulated idiots is Angela Rayner.
But the striver is Michael Gove.
Michael Gove.
Well, he sounds like a striver.
He talks like a striver. This fucking...
But as you've noticed here, the man is as slippery as it can get.
Yes.
He's done anything and everything for anyone who's begged, and as such has been given his sort of loyalty from the 1922 committee,
yes,
his loyalty from the backers of the Tory party. So now he gets to run the Spectator as his little parachute out. Like Nick Clegg gets to work at Facebook.
Yeah, now that Tories have used up all their political capital... Gove was parachuted out and given a role in The Spectator in reward for being the ultimate toady. He is not in power. He is not decisionary, not really, but he's been given an important mouthpiece job as a reward for being one of these disgusting, striving elites. And again, they control the membership of everyone below them. And not only do they manage that, they are able to intervene at every point. This is why, again, this is why entryism is retarded, because if you get down to the bottom layer, if you're competent and you know the right people, relatively easily find yourself on the interface. You can find yourself basically here. You've all the way back here. You find yourself in the layer between the productive class and the elite. You feel like you've made it, but you haven't. There are a lot of filters above you, and a lot of people who may not like you and who may have been looking into you can reach down and you can be gone tomorrow.
And I think one of the ways they do this as well is you've got to understand the importance of where the messaging comes from and who the messaging is designed for.
Yes.
The sort of intra-elite communication that happens. And the Klaus Schwab example is perfect in regards to this.
Yes.
Because it shows us the elite signalling is done via news media and publicly out in the open.
Yes.
That is why you read articles from The Spectator or The New Statesman or Unheard and you think, who the hell is this for and what is it trying to tell me? Because it's not for you. It's for somebody's little civil service peon so that they know what the argument line is for next week's PMQs or some nonsense.
A New Culture Forum isn't designed for the public. It's designed for intra-elite communication.
Yes.
Policy Exchange is not for the public. It's designed for intra-elite communication and consent manufacture.
Mm.
The Henry Jackson Society has basically been wound up. The Henry Jackson Society was not for the public. It is intra-elite communication and narrative
crafting.
And
a very specific elite in that capacity.
Yes. It does. The Klaus Schwab's a great example because it does show us how it is done out in the open and has to be done out in the open, because this class is now so big and so diffuse. Communication regarding UK policy often seems to miss the mark in terms of the public, because you will find it's often written by and for minor elite loyalists. We have a lot of examples of this, the most potent of which, I think, from our work was that...
Nudge stock
and the Nudge Unit and all those disgusting social engineering people who, when non-elite comes...
I completely forgot about Sadiq Khan with the cruise
campo.
Sunny day in Lambeth could murder a cruise campo.
But when the public comes into contact with things like nudge theory, they're aghast.
Yeah.
They're like, oh my God, it is just these people just treat us like children.
But that's why Richard Thaler can go on to these Nudge Unit podcasts and talk about streamlining the choice environment upstream from people's individual wants and needs. What he's telling you is that people from the government are going to completely readapt the environment that you are making purchases and choices in.
Yes.
So that they can get better outcomes out of you. But if you try explain that to most people, it's mumble jumble. But the folk that have to be receptive to what the Nudge Unit does, because really their job's to facilitate what it's asking for, they grasp this.
Well, you will also find that much of inter-elite communication is deliberately boring.
Mm.
It is deliberately hard to find, and you only usually find it through word of mouth or knowing, really. Yeah, or through us, basically.
Yes.
But we've talked about this quite a bit in the past, actually. If you go to some of our previous work, we talk about the fact that you can predict the political future because... you can tap into the inter-elite communication, which is done openly. And people, if you could do that, most people would see it. But, well, they do, and they don't care.
Yeah.
They're distracted. They're distracted by the same people who are being signalled to. They're all distracted by Israeli football fans.
Yeah, that's...
Protests in America. Oh, it's windy today. You know? Yes, it is just that simple. Oh, do you want to read a white paper? A what?
Yeah.
Do you want to read a government white paper? It'll tell you what's coming down the legislative pipeline.
Does anyone know about the attributes network?
Yeah, the attributes framework, which is the absolute bedrock of digital ID.
Which is like 4 years old.
Well, yeah, which
point.
Is like four, we talked about that four fucking years ago.
Or we could go all the way back to the 2017 digital and consumer marketing bill and the fact that that's where the framework of that even further originates.
And it all originates really from the EU, and it's all because of this regulator alignment that's been completely maintained
in
Britain.
But unless you can hold in your head how these structures communicate between each other and what they're trying to aim at, and bear in mind, most of the people that
Well, you also have to know things like the fact that Brexit's fake.
No. But no, even beyond that, I think there's a lot of filters there. It's not even necessarily that these people involved in this strata know that this works. It's that they live within it and they're just another cog.
Yeah.
It's to them, they're little bits so simple.
It is. So, when you are inside of it, let me go to this. When you are even here, it is very difficult to break out of the thinking of this is just the way things are done up here.
Yes.
And you will get this is just the way things are done up here within the productive class. They will mirror, and in almost like a cargo cult sense, the behavior of the elite. That's why a lot of the fads of the elite filter down first to the upper middle class, because they are part of the interface layer. Well, our question is, how is this structured? How do the elites maintain this hierarchy?
Where's the discipline within it?
How do they make sure that they completely control the membership and actions of each layer here? And it's mostly not what you would think. I'm using the infamous Prince Andrew image in the background to make a point here. But elite loyalty is enforced socially, financially, reputationally, and then exceptionally in that order.
Yes. Socially, the elite as a class are a social scene. Elites mostly mix with other elites, so social controls are the simplest and easiest way to enforce conformity.
Yes.
I think in some regards it's like you'd know Michael Gove is out because all of a sudden you would have none of these young Tory MP assistants walking with him anymore, and people would just give him the cold shoulder.
Yeah.
And it's just as simple as that. All the front benches are giving Michael Gove the cold shoulder, I think he's chap.
Basically, yes. It is just that, though. It is what you must understand, and we'll talk about this later, is that the elite are obsessed with their own fame and obsessed with their own status because power wants to be seen. These people are boring, they have power, and they want to be seen. And if they don't want to be seen outside the elite class, they want to be seen at least inside the elite class.
And there's another aspect to this as well. As we have covered, a lot of these positions taken up by lower level elites are actually really fragile. They're not feasible without support outside of this.
No.
So financially, as a consequence of the overproduction elites and the fact that most elites exist on forms of elite welfare, this makes them easy to simply cut off. No more money printer money for you. No more bullshit NGO jobs. No more grants.
And having seen this process take place multiple times, you can watch this happen to people, basically. If you know what's going on, if you keep your ears to the ground, and if you just speak to them. It's very difficult to talk about this, because we're not people who are fame chasers or people who brag. But we've met a lot of the functionaries, or at least we've met people who've met a lot of. We've had a vertical slice of the British elite between us, really. Mm. I think me more than you, but that was mostly because I'm more willing to wade through some of these people.
And no one wants to talk to me. And
the people are absolutely deathly afraid of you. Yes,
maybe that's a consequence of the fact that they're worried about their reputation.
Yes, well, so the fact is most they just yes. You first have social control, I mean internal social control, as in social shunning that doesn't leave the elite class. Then you have financial pressure. They are simply not... The phone stops ringing and you stop being given work. It then moves to a more out-group footing. It's reputational. The elite, as mostly fame-obsessed managerial cog people are obsessed with their reputation. If intergroup social shaming and quiet denial of funds does not work, they can always say publicly in unison that you are stinky and uncool, and anyone who wants to be someone should stay away from you. They don't have to blackmail you. They don't have to happen to put embarrassing details out there about you. They can just say, you're not it.
Mm.
You're not cool. You're not the future. We've all got together and we've decided that we don't like you and you're not very good. That's all they have to say. And your reputation, you know, your greasy flagpole climbing is gone. They don't have to do anything to you apart from that in most cases. And that's quite a high escalation. Mm. To get to that point, you have to be worth talking about in public. Most people just aren't.
Well, also fundamentally, so many of the people within this sphere and this class are so neurotic that the first level and even the threat of the second, yes, they've already truly, you know, rejigged their alliances and they're all back there.
Sorry, I can't come to the Witan this year. My financial backers told me I can't.
Yeah, something along those lines. Yes, I could imagine that as a hypothetical.
Yeah, hypothetically, if someone was told by their financial backers not to go to the Witan, that would be embarrassing.
And then there are, of course, the exceptional circumstances.
This is what most people think of when they think of the enforcing of elite loyalty, but these are a minority of a minority. There's less cases of this than there are apex elites.
Mm.
This is a very... You see it because the most grubby and entrenched people like Prince Andrew get involved in it, but it is just them.
Mm.
It is just that layer. That layer is what takes the exceptional, the hard power... loyalty enforcement. Those are the only people worth blackmailing.
I think, to be fair, I would probably suggest in certain elite spheres within the social factor, there is the threat of blackmail.
But it's
and
mostly,
there is rumour and
mostly
tattle
reputational
and gossip.
Though, yes.
But really what you're talking about between the first two and the second two, and even more so the final one here, is the extent to which they go about excising you from the group and the public vision.
Yes, it's all of these can be done legally. You can go out and say you don't like someone and you think their vision is crap without legal repercussions, really.
Mm.
Especially if you're a member of the elite. That's not blackmail. That's just saying, oi, shut up, or we'll tell people we don't like you, because we won't.
Mm.
It's the exceptional blackmail, the idea that you end up introduced to the pig. You know, most, as we make the joke, but most people wish they could be introduced to the pig. Most people who are social climbers are just waiting to be... They're waiting to be worth compromising.
I know, imagine doing your stint at Policy Exchange for, like, 20 years, and then, like, they're all, oh, look, it's your time. You're going to run for us as an MP in such and such a shithole. and you're going to appeal to, like, some giant, like, Sikh component of the population or whatever. And then you're like, but get to see the pig? The pig? No, you're nowhere near important enough to see that. You're not even David Cameron.
Well, let's go all the way back to the beginning here. Let's go all the way back to Burnley.
Mm.
If you're a lad for Burnley, even if you're a clever lad for Burnley, you're not going to be able, even if you have the chat, to talk to these people. They will sniff you out immediately.
Because
as
you
not...
do not visit the Cannes Films Festival at summer. You don't have an extra house in Nice that your granddad owns.
You don't use the correct language.
No, but this is what these are the things these people would sort of discuss in a fashion because they think it's entirely normal. But you could be the most upper middle class, successful son of a business owner from Burnley, but you are not going to have an education in the classics from Eton.
You're also just not going to have the managerial chat.
Oh, of course, yes.
Without the explicit hierarchy of the old world, elites must constantly signal status to one another to pass certain tests. The doublespeak language of managerialism is one of the primary filters. One of the most powerful things you can do is see how certain narratives appear to elites themselves. You realize much of the empty talk is not empty. It is steeped in meaning, revealed deep in documents which are often boring and dense on purpose. Loyalist elites also cut ties with non-elites at the faintest whiff of dissent, or will even arbitrarily punish someone to simply see who comes to their aid if anyone. Mm. And that's a process I've seen.
You think about that personally. Next time. Think yeah. about that next time you see Lawrence Fox or someone else like that trying to, you know, accrue yeah. large sums of money for some form of legal case.
Yes.
Because really, in a certain test, he's being shit tested.
In a sense, he's being tested. Like, how much consensus can you gather? How many people rally to your flag? How much elite status can you signal?
Mm.
And some of you may know the term shibboleth, and you may know what it represents. So being slightly cheeky here, I will say. Mm. It's an old term that Hebrews used to kill people with the wrong accent, basically.
But yes, it's a way of having a phrase that might mean something to one person and something entirely different to a different individual who knows.
Yes.
It's and to, is expecting.
It's to do with the pronunciation or understanding of a phrase or concept that identifies you as part of a specific group. And the elite class are extremely good at their shibboleths.
This is also partly why we put the wind up certain people, because we speak partially in what only could be described as minor elite activation phrases.
Yeah.
Having encountered, as you say, a slice of the UK elite, sometimes at length, their fear is often secondary to their fascination with how outsiders know their language and rituals. And I think I can remember a specific discussion you had with someone, and I think I was there for that one as well, where the normal typical problem of trying to describe the state is like trying to describe an elephant while you're wearing a blindfold.
I'm afraid you weren't there for that one.
But this individual who is a lot closer to it than a lot of other people who make a living out of pretending they're close to it, turned around to it and says, well, you're not just telling me the elephant, you're telling me what it ate for breakfast.
Yes.
You're describing its taxonomy and possibly even telling me how it might feel.
You must understand that the people in the elite, if they're not stupid, they understand that the elite exists. The active elite is made up of elite theorists. Yeah, they understand elite theory.
The you're sharp not, end is self-aware. Yes,
you're not going to persuade them with elite theory. They know.
Mm.
They're using it against you. They know.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, we're in power and you're not. Yes, we know. Because we're in power and you're not. And that's really obvious to us because we're in power and you're not.
Oh, that's very cute that you've worked that out. Yeah, frankly funny, dear chap.
Because a lot of
back to your prol station.
Yeah. Your prol slop flag hangers, your absolute political spastics, do not understand something that is incredibly common knowledge for even just mid-level elites. If you're below the scut work layer, if you're not one of these inspirational fat people or blacks that they promoted as a joke to insulate themselves from useful people, you know elite theory, and you can speak about it in a way where you're not actually speaking about it. And the thing is, inverting that and basically going to people and go, I know what you're actually saying, and it disgusts me. Here's what you're saying. Here's your financial history. Here's the grubby people you're related to. Here's the things you've said in the past. And, you know, here's all of this. We understand the new speak. And that, honestly, it is quite edifying. It's been quite nice to be so terrifying to certain people that certain people actually will be disturbed by the sight or sound of you because they've heard of you and they know that you don't brook with their bullshit, really. But it is, there's a lot of these elite shibboleths that we are able to interact with. And when you talk to these people, it kind of breaks them because you're able to speak like somebody who they're used to being in a position of, you're able to speak like a higher level managerialist than them.
This is, of course,
but you're
why
not.
We have an undying and an unquestionable love for the nation
of Israel. Yeah, of course we did. I've stressed it before, but the only democracy in the Middle East.
Never late. Never black-pilled. Never again.
We need some...
Some stars of David.
Some everything.
Some Am Yisrael chais in the yes. chat, please.
It's my favourite tea.
Yam
Yisrael chai. It's a sweet potato tea. It's Yam Yisrael chai. Mercy me, but
I suppose it begs a question at the end of all this.
Yeah.
Who does matter? Who can be reached? And are those the same people?
The thing is, in most cases, those are not the same people. I'll put this back on screen. Because
I got to meet Lee Anderson MP, or he came on our podcast. Interface, sub-interface, non-productive, idle, not decisionary.
Yeah. what you're actually finding is, you know, you think you're up the ziggurat, but actually, you're not up the ziggurat, because the ziggurat looks like this. It doesn't look like this. It actually looks, you know, like this. And so you're here in the shit with what the elite class basically consider, like, janitors.
You're polishing Michael Gove's shoes.
Yeah, you're down there basically polishing Michael Gove's shoes and writing policy papers. And you think, I'm in charge. And
I'm going to work my way up.
And there's three bloated layers of overproduced elites above you laughing at you.
Do you know what? Do you know what's an appropriate term here? It's very overused on the internet.
Yeah.
But what happens to most of these people in the bottom two tiers, even the striving elite tier,
yeah,
they end up ran through.
Yes.
The people who are coming to you because they want to go, I'm an MP, I'm such and such, I'm part of this lobby group and I want you. They have actually internalized the fact that they are so pointless and so insular and so, not insular, sorry, insignificant, that they've had to come to people outside of their own hierarchy for something a bit novel and new.
Well, that's why someone like Connor Tomlinson is so simpering and so deferent. And again, why Tommy Robinson in Israel has been like ritually humiliated over and over again. It's because he's not been brought up as a functionary. He's not like a nuclear expert going to visit Israel. No. He's one of the mass. And so they have to signal, especially because it's Israel, they have to signal that they are better than him, position-wise and racially. Mm. They're making that they're almost making it too clear.
And the inverse of this is the consequence of the fact that we have had some people come to us that you could describe as being at that top upper echelon.
Yes.
And what they've come to us and asked for is help. Because they don't know what to do with the position they're in, how to manage using that position towards other ends without being socially, financially, reputationally, or exceptionally expunged.
There is also the dynamic here that the sovereign elite, the ones with their heads screwed on, are still a prisoner of the rest of the elite class.
Mm, they're a prisoner. Babysitting them.
Yeah, they're the prisoner of their fellow sovereign elites, some of which are genocidal ethnic goblins. They're a prisoner of the striving elite who want to step into their shoes as soon as they become empty. They're a victim of the whims of the minor elite, which is set by said ethnic goblins above them. A lot of these people also just don't know what's going on.
No.
There are four layers beneath these people before they reach the street. And all of these people are obsessed with gaining status and will not speak honestly to them. And so a lot of the time, if you're at the core of the elite bubble, it's really hard to see out of it.
Hmm.
It's incredibly hard to see out of it, even from the outer layer, because all these people face inwards.
I might swap one of these bits around.
Yeah, go for it.
Because I think what we need to understand is that there are vulnerabilities within this structure. Yes. There are. But they don't really benefit us. What really causes a lot of this cycling around and the hustle and bustle is vanity.
Yes.
They are somewhat powerful, but often anonymous minor elites who are obsessed with the idea of being celebrities. That they don't just want to be a millionaire, they have to be a billionaire. They don't just have to be someone who has a powerful position. They want the status, the social status of being powerful.
Yes.
And with that, of course, the idea of fame. They also want to be liked and to be cool. Your politics seeming cool is more important to some of these people than actually doing their job properly, which would worry everyone.
Yes.
Managerial functionaries are deeply uncool and so crave cool to meet their positions of minor power. And on top of all of this, every single person, almost without a doubt, in this entire strata, are incredibly petty people with an awful, awful sense of intra-class competition.
Yes.
And this is actually really one of the things that's probably facilitating the collapse we are experiencing in Britain of so many of our otherwise working services, is that people from all these different stratas are too busy bickering with each other and trying to force people below them so that they can get launched upwards and so on and so forth, because to them, they want to be that idle, sovereign elite status.
Thank you for the £5 there, Connie, current year, a regular donator. So you're telling me it's not the 13 Illuminati bloodlines and the Priory of Sion?
We're not telling you that.
Well, the thing is, it kind of is, but imagine if that was like Reddit and Soy and Pound Shop and awful. And like, imagine all of the conspiracies with all the cool stuff stripped out of it.
Yeah.
So it's like, no, the conspiracies aren't cool. They're awful. They're boring. They're laid out in 50,000-page dense legal documents that make you want to vomit.
But to wrap up here... there's a couple of these left, sorry. Learning a lot more streams, please. Thank you, Odin Entertainment.
We're trying our best, okay?
You posited the question, where can change be made?
Yes. Well, partially here. In the interface, here. They have to keep reaching down to the productive class. They do. And so really, if you can, in a very real sense, move and sew up parts of the productive class worried about the decline, that is one of the things you can do. It's difficult to do, but it is worth doing. It's worth talking to people who matter but are non-ruling, non-governing elites.
And I think part of what you're getting at here as well, yes, is that it's not necessarily about going and being one of the people in these positions and having power yourself.
No.
It's, if you leave that one up...
This one, yeah.
It's about disrupting and taking use of that process there.
Yes.
This cascading sort of discipline throughout, moaning in orders, sort of coming up and down, and that hierarchy... Actually throwing a spanner in the works so that the people at the top strata maybe actually completely lose focus and sight about what's happening at the bottom.
Yes.
Or in the middle, which is really more important to them than the mass of people below in the public. If there was some sort of strike of, you know, assistant MPs or something, nothing would really change in a certain sense, but the individuals and the MPs and the people above them would go, someone's disciplining the people in our stratas of elite that isn't us.
Yes.
And that would put the wind up them a lot more than, like, dare I say, someone going and petrol bombing an MP's, you know, surgery or campaigning outside a migrant hotel. Mess with these people where they are, not where they aren't.
That's kind of what we've got to do. I've got to do a little bit of it. Digitally and personally. The thing is, I've given... maybe not sitting for much longer, but I've given sitting Tory MPs an in-person and over the like internet dressing down. I've been in voice calls where I have actually berated sitting MPs. I've berated sitting MPs to their faces.
And no, more importantly,
yeah,
in front of their own class of elites.
Yes.
And that's... it doesn't matter to a certain extent if 2,000 people ratio some Tory MP on Twitter.
But if you show up to one of their fundraising dinners and you're a really cool person that people talk about as being a cool political person, you turn around and go, I think you are shit.
Gives them a backhander.
My actual comment, because I was asked for advice for Tory MPs, and my advice was for Tory MPs to kill themselves.
Run and hide before we come for you.
go and play in traffic. If you want to make this country a better place, go out in the road. Mm. That is the most... Unless you can't be part of the structure and succeed within it. I know a lot of people talk about the fact that we're crazy and hardline about that. But no, get up in these people's faces. And seriously, making these people feel uncool and unloved is their worst. Now, they don't care about your arguments. They don't care about the intel. They find the sparring, interesting. That's within their remit. If you go, you are uncool. Nobody likes you. You aren't what's happening. You aren't what's coming. And if the time ever came, we would all laugh at you as you fell over. That's what these people fear hearing. They fear being chastised by the people they think are cool. Really, it's their vanity. It's their vanity more than their ideas that is their vulnerability. But apart from that, really, it's about building something that they can be jealous of. It's about building something of our own and going, no Tories, fuck you. We're cooler than you, we're better than you, we have a lot more energy and we're more genuine than you, we're attracting more of the productive class than you are, you need to worry about us. And you can't worry about us in the same way that you do with everybody else, because we have the ear of many minor elites. And the thing is, We do. If you're somebody who's a ministerial aide, or you're somebody who works in the Foreign Office or the Home Office, I know you're out there and you listen to this, do try and build your own consensus with people, or just get out. If you can't find a way forward in that structure, leave it. The homeopathic power you have been given isn't worth it, because this process will always take place to you. You will always be hard patrolled out, and even if you get to be like a Michael Gove, you are still, Michael Gove still is not in power.
You still got to answer to someone.
Yes. You answer to somebody all the way up this miserable tree. The answer to the game is to not play it. It's to be outside of it and to be someone that these people have to interface with, and to make it unpleasant, to remind them of who and what they are. And I think that's the most important part, is that a lot of, like I said, a lot of people swear blind they're not, but you have to go to them and go, no, 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 no. Very few people are part of the problem. Normal people aren't to blame for this.
Yes.
But you're not a normal person, are you? I know who your uncle is. I know who your father is. I know where you've worked. I know where you went to school. You're not one of us. You're a skinwalker.
You're an elite in waiting.
Yeah, you're an elite in waiting. You're a member of a class of people who fundamentally hates us. And that really, like, who are the elite? A miserable pile of secrets. A hateful group of people. They are textually awful. But studying them is somewhat interesting, but my main reaction to meeting these people is just utter disgust in most cases. Even the ones who agree with us, I mostly find repugnant because of what they are and what they represent. And accurately communicating that to those people is important. Being in the room with them and expressing absolute rejection of not only their ideas, but what they are, is important. And you must make clear that you're not a Marxist who doesn't agree with hierarchy. You are disgusted by, these are our lords.
I mean,
these are the people placed in these important functionally, you know, power positions. This is who's supposed to be running this country. I don't disagree with power. I disagree with who is in power, because they are incompetent. As I put in the book, backs too weak and shoulders too narrow to wield power openly. This is a hidden hierarchy. It used to be in the past that the Lord would state it openly. You know, it's much more honest to say, I am Baron so-and-so because my father was Baron so-and-so and the king gave him a ring. Then, oh, well, I went to this conference and I've been appointed here and I'm part of this committee and didn't you hear my podcast? It's all so gay and fallen.
No one swears fealty.
No one swears fealty to Michael Gove.
No.
No one.
I think we've talked about Michael Gove enough this evening. I think, to be fair, we've talked enough this evening.
I think we have. Sorry, we've been very.
But hopefully, what we're not trying to do here is indicate exactly what subset of 100 people are the elite or anything. But hopefully, throughout what we're trying to describe here, you as an individual viewer have a better idea now of what people you see in the news or see in the media, or don't, for that fact, seeing the news or seeing the media, have an influence, have an effect, are people you should look to, and in what cases, 99%, aren't who you should look to.
Yes.
Anyway, that's probably enough rambling from ourselves, especially from me. Go to the pub, even if it is cold.
Yes, have a good one, guys. We'll see you next time.